Welcome back to our weird, weird little pod, Poetry Recap Theater. So excited to be here. My name is Ariel, and I am joined by the only person I am comfortable being weird around. It is my co-host, Grace. Grace, what's up?
I was going to say something weird, but I chickened out. Let's pot it. Is that the kid parody song?
That's weird.
That's
I like it. Pot it. Yes, we are here to talk about Weird : The Al Yankovic Story, which is a movie about Weird Al Yankovic, which is a movie that premiered on the Roku channel, which is a thing that I couldn't find.
Roku channel. Ariel, there's a lot of articles online that are like, no, you downloaded the Roku app. You didn't download the Roku channel. And it's like, God, stop making it very confusing.
Yeah, on some level, I feel like I'm always quick to think, okay, how much of this was done intentionally, where like it's part of, you know, the, we want it to be part of the internet culture of people are looking for it. So like perhaps it gives the illusion that more people are looking for it than actually are. But whether they planned it or not, people had a rough time looking for the thing. I joked on a previous pod that it had taken me 6 days to find it. It wasn't, but it took longer than I wanted it to. But ultimately I did find it, and it was available for free to their credit, although with some annoying ads.
I couldn't rewatch this.
Chris, haven't seen this movie.
No, I watched it 2 months ago, and I have not been able to rewatch it. We tried. I'm visiting my parents. I have a Roku stick at my house, but I'm traveling this weekend, and we tried on probably 7 different devices, and we could not make it work here in Canada. So I don't know. And it's available in Canada, so I don't understand. So that's it.
You saw it. You love talking about.
I did. TIFF. Yes, on
TIFF, the Toronto International Film Festival.
Yeah.
What were your? I guess let's talk about that for a second. You saw it. What did you think about it first? And like, what was the reception in the room as far as you could tell?
It was really good. I did kind of wish I saw it after it aired at the midnight showing. There's a word for it where they play it at midnight, but I realized that like 100% of the time I'm never awake at like 2 a.m. So I decided probably better that I didn't. I can be known to fall asleep in a movie theater, and so I'm glad I didn't watch it at midnight. But apparently I got like a really great reaction at the midnight showing. The viewing that I saw it in, it was like a packed theater, and yeah, it was like really funny. Kind of that thing of like people, I saw this movie at 9:30 in the morning, people like leaving afterward, just like everybody delighting about like different parts of the movie. I really like keeping my headphones off as I'm leaving a movie sometimes to like see if I can catch the like people's thoughts about the movies, and this one was just like an absolute treat. People really were delighted and tickled by this movie. It's so, I mean, it's called Weird. It is weird and hilarious and funny. So
it is really funny. We were talking about this before, like it's, for me, it's like the exact, it's hitting and operating at this like very specific level of stupidity that I enjoy, where it's simultaneously making fun of the genre at large, like the biopic genre, and then also making fun of itself, making fun of Weird Al, making fun of all these people. No one is safe, and I think in that sense no one is offended, right? Because it's making fun of everything on its surface, and nothing is serious, and in some ways nothing is real. Certainly a lot of the plot in this movie isn't real. I think there are some real elements.
I thought this was a documentary.
I would love for this to be a documentary. Some of it feels like it could have been. When I saw Madonna, I was like, oh my God, that's totally Madonna, even though it's not Madonna. That's not what she looks like.
Evan Rachel Wood killed
No, but everyone in this movie, some big names in this movie, and everyone in this movie doing a great job. Diedrich Bader doing the narration, someone that you either know or don't know, but if you don't know by name, you know who he is.
He's the guy who's not the tall guy from Drew Carey Show.
he's not the tall guy. But if you were Ryan tall, Smiles, very quickly, actually, before I forget, if you were tall, you could see that we have a feed for this podcast that you should subscribe to. And it's you should search Poetry Recaps Theater on any of your podcast catchers, or poetryrecaps.com/movies. Thank you.
Rate and review us. We've been around for a while, but it's very recently. It's been very fun. There's so many movies coming out, but we've covered so many movies in our catalog. And sometimes, not to brag, we're a bit ahead of the game. You know, we're like, we watched a movie a long time ago and then people will find it. And you can go back in the feed. The feed is the easiest way. We'll get a little bit lost in the larger feed because the feed can only hold so many podcasts.
Dozens of casts.
Yeah. All of our recaps are in our post-show recaps theater feed. So if you're like, I just saw Everything Everywhere All at Once and I want to hear people talk about it. We talked about it when it came out. So it's in the feed. So yeah, it's worth subscribing to, I think.
It really is. And that's all I have to say about that. Diedrich Bader, the narrator, would want you to subscribe. It would be tremendously helpful to rate and review us if you enjoy the podcast.
Yeah.
But we have someone who's not as tall, you know, not to like height shame, but he's just like famous for not being very tall. Daniel Radcliffe. Yeah.
And Weird Al is kind of tall. So I know that.
And Weird Al is kind of tall. But to his credit, Daniel Radcliffe is very tall personality wise.
Yeah.
He has a very big personality. And I think he's really come into his own. You know, we saw him, you and I covered a movie. God, when was it? Maybe it was over the summer with Sandra Bullock and Channing Tatum.
The Lost City. Yeah.
I'm hoping that you'll remember the name of before I get to the end of the sentence. Yes, The Lost City. and he was really fun in that. Like, it's been really fun for him to find these off kilter, if you will, kind of left of center or right of center, whatever, roles. I think he's having a lot of fun. And anytime he's having fun, honestly, we're having fun. I think I have realized that about Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah, he recently just came out and was like, yeah, not all of us who are involved in Harry Potter hate trans people. Don't worry. Good to go. I'm like, thanks, Daniel. Appreciate it. And then also he's just like, yeah, I think I'm going to do any weird thing that I want to do. He's in like Swiss Army Man. He's like Igor and Victor Frankenstein. He was the bad guy in the Lost City movie. Like, he's just having a delight. I think he just made all this Harry Potter money and he's like, I'm only going to do things I want to do. And it's super fun. And this one is so good. Weird Al heavily involved in the making of this film, and the development and production. So he was on board, and it's, you know, you would not have expected, I think, like 5-10 years ago to be like, you know who'd make a great Weird Al? Daniel Radcliffe. But it works.
No, it totally works. And I think it's to your credit, to your credit, you were involved in this. No, to your point, rather.
Yes.
Once, you know, the marketing started coming out and you're watching, I'm like, I believe it. Like, I don't believe, you know, he like looks a lot like him, although
he does,
but it's more to, as we keep saying, it's more to like his portrayal and the way he has kind of within his own right. Like, there is this element to which like he is similar to Weird Al only in the sense of like he has stardom and he has a personality in public that either is or isn't the same as his personality and how he has presented himself as. And now again, as all these roles that he's taking are a little silly, where is the real Daniel Radcliffe? I think all of these things are kind of at play also in a way that just makes his portrayal even richer.
Yeah, I think that there's sometimes a thing with these like biopics, like how close they look like them. And it, like, I don't know, I'm moving further and further away from the like they have to look almost identical to the person. Like, I don't know, you know, I think that sometimes they can, like, he looks, I think all you have to do is not look unlike them. Does that make sense? Like, if it's, sometimes it's like so bad you're like, this isn't working. But if it like is like even sort of working, you're like, all right, yeah, I'm in. It's fine. Like, that's, and I think in this movie as well, as the movie, like unfolds and becomes this thing, it's very much like Weird Al. I think in that, like when you hear Weird Al, all of the singing is Weird Al in this movie. And I kind of just forget sometimes that like Weird Al, he's like not the best singer, but he's like a very good singer. I think like he can like hit notes and he doesn't sound bad. And so
there's a confidence, there's a confidence there that he's always had. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like catchy and it makes you like, it makes it easy to sing along, I think. And there's a way about this movie, like as it starts to become what it is, that you're like, oh, this is so Weird Al, that it's like, it's not like, you know, this like sophisticated thing. It's like very silly, but it's like good silly. And like Daniel Radcliffe almost like works perfectly. Like, I almost don't want them to like, did you know the video that was going around about a year ago of like the guy who was doing the Robin Williams impersonation? Did you ever see this?
No, I think so.
I'm just like, okay.
Vaguely familiar.
Yeah. And part of me was like, I don't know. That's like too, it's like almost like too close. Like, I don't want it that close. Like, and especially in this where it's like a parody, it's almost more fun that it's like that's Daniel Radcliffe being Weird Al. I think it's like more fun. I think it works better, I think.
No, I agree. And I think they do a good job of kind of, you know, Daniel Radcliffe does a good job of, I guess, lip syncing Weird Al, but it's like very clearly, to your point, Weird Al singing. Great people in the cast. Lin-Manuel Miranda has a cameo in the beginning. Rainn Wilson has a big role as Dr. Demento.
Dr. Demento, yeah.
Julianne Nicholson plays plays his mom.
Julianne Nicholson.
Julianne. Toby Huss, who
yeah.
I love from one of my all-time favorite shows, Halt and Catch Fire. I was so happy to see him here. Toby Huss is great. Dave Bloom, mother,
Val,
mother of Mike Bloom, our brother. No, it's it's mother. Mother is so much better.
Mother is better.
I care that I butchered my own joke.
Yeah,
a lot of
Will
people.
Will Forte's in this movie.
Scott Ackerman. I didn't even realize he was in this.
There's a bunch of fun cameos that almost in this section I don't want to name because like it's
No, you're right. You're right. As we go further like, down the list, you have some very funny cameos. But yeah, this movie is entertaining. Grace, if people can bother to find this movie on whatever channel or torrent of options, as Weird Al himself tweeted earlier today, should people seek this movie out?
Oh, absolutely! You know what? He tweeted that on the day it came out. It's amazing. He was like, there's a VPN, very probably no way to watch this movie. A famous tweet. No, this movie is so fun. You won't regret it. It's 108 minutes, so it's like just over an hour and a half. It's pretty fun. Another one that I feel like it does help to go in a little bit like not knowing what you're gonna get, and we might have already like spoiled you a little bit that it's like a pretty much a parody of comedy movie, but it's pretty fun. This movie is really fun and well worth watching, I think.
I agree with that. I think it's very silly, it's very self-aware, it's just like trying to outdo itself constantly and how silly it can be and building jokes, and if that sounds like it's the kind of thing for you, then I think for sure you'll enjoy this movie. And as I like,
if you're here because you're a film critic, like if you're like, I really love the art of film, like maybe not. You might like to skip this one, you know, but I think it's very smart and clever. So,
yeah, this is probably more movie than film.
Yeah.
But Weird Al himself might say, what's the difference? So
right.
who are we to say that?
Yeah.
But I guess that's it. You know, run to your living room to figure out how to see this movie is what I will say. It's my rating. Because again, it's okay, boomer, you might be saying to me saying that, but to you I say good luck.
That's right.
So for now, we're gonna get into spoilers. We are going to spill the PSR Weird Al tea. And get into some plot. So here we go, as I try to summarize this incredibly ridiculous movie. This movie is basically fiction. This is a lot of like
basically.
I think there are things in there, there are seeds of truth about his life, but for the most part, it's just like very exaggerated retellings of his life and his childhood and how he like his early rise and his music career. So basically it starts out and he's in the hospital somehow and he's been in some kind of accident, and then there's like the flashback. So this, it's already playing around with tropes of biopics and tropes of these kinds of movies. It's like, you're probably wondering how I got here type stuff. So we do the flashback. As a kid, Al becomes interested in playing the accordion, and of course his father is like, I don't like that. So his mom is like,
his father is like, I don't like,
because it's Toby Huss. And then his mom is like, his mom is like, oh, I'm going to buy you an accordion in secret. So far, so good. Eventually, it's like too much to bear. And then he finally gets old enough. He leaves the house. He gets kicked out. You know, there's problems with his parents. And he lives now with his roommates, Steve, Jim, and Bermuda. And here was his first like stroke of genius, I guess you could say, is they're listening to the song My Sharona on the radio, and he's fixing a bologna sandwich, and he writes what I think is his actual first single, My Bologna, or My Bologna, I think, set to the tune of My Sharona, but whatchamacallit, he they go to record it in like a public bathroom. So that's like the ridiculous thing of like, okay, we're going to record this, you know, there's like a scene change. We're going to go record this in a public bathroom. And it sounds great. So he sends it to a local radio DJ who puts it on the air immediately. Like, wow, this is so good. It's instant success. And his friends are like, oh, you'll never get instant success. And it's like, wow, instant success. It's that kind of humor. So then he performs. Then they're at a club later on. He performs I Love Rocky Road to the, you know, to this tune of I Love Rock and Roll. It's a biker bar. It goes on really well. He's, again, continuing to find success. He catches the interest of Dr. Demento.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Who's played by Rainn Wilson, because of course. And he offers to be his manager. And then he's like, you need a new name. Your name is weird. Or damn it. Your name is Al Yankovic. What if you were weird Al Yankovic? Like, and wow, weird Al Yankovic is born. And at a party hosted by Dr. Demento, weird Al meets Wolfman Jack, who's of course played by Jack Black. Yep. And is challenged to write by the bass player in Queen, John Deacon, or somebody mm-hmm. who's playing him, to be clear, is challenged to write a spoof of Another One Bites the Dust on the spot and to prove his like actual music writing,
genius.
Thank you. And he comes up with Another One Rides the Bus, which is, again, like all the songs, at least for sure, are the things that we can say are real. Like as far as these are the real songs that he came out with. Yes. In his like up and coming career, and all the celebrities are super impressed, and then they like kick out John Deacon and Wolfman Jack. They're like, you guys suck. And he gets a record contract. His first album goes multi-platinum, and he starts the artists that he's parodying start to see this thing on the news that they're calling the Yankovic bump, which is like the song that he's parodying also gets a bump in sales and in I guess not streaming at that point yet, but just like in listenership and requests and all that. And he's even interviewed by Oprah Winfrey herself, and at least in the movie, Brunson. In the universe of the movie. He calls home, and his father, of course, is like, no, go to hell. So then Dr. I love how I'm just like shortchanging his dad.
I love it.
His Dr. Demento like suggests that Al write his own song, which Al's like, screw that. That's not happening. But then because he gets kind of roofied accidentally, I think. Well,
yeah, the guacamole.
Kind of accidentally roofies him with LSD in the guacamole. He comes up with his own, what is in the movie, Weird Al's own original song called Eat It. Now, in the real world, Eat It was a parody of the Michael Jackson song Beat It. But here in the movie, it is a song that Weird Al wrote himself. And then later on, it seems like Michael Jackson comes out with Beat It after Weird Al's song Eat It. So now this is an example of a real song that has now been parodied by a real artist. So Weird Al is pissed because now Michael Jackson is stealing from
him. Yeah. I believe this is what like sends him into the tailspin and the thing that we see at the beginning of the movie, I think, as well.
Yes. He meets Madonna, and it kind of like helps send him down this bad road. You know, she wants like a bad boy, and he starts to like, you know,
because she wants the Yankovic bump.
She wants the Yankovic bump. We know that, but he doesn't know that. She starts like spending a lot of time with him and insisting that he writes his own. Like she wants the Yankovic bump to one of her songs, but he wants to keep writing his own songs. But then like that coupled with this like tailspin that he's been thrown by Michael Jackson stealing from him. He becomes like basically goes down a bender, and he's getting really drunk and like doing drugs, and he gets in this near fatal car accident, which sends us to the very beginning of the movie, like you said. And now he's in this accident, and while he's regaining consciousness, because he's in the hospital and because Lin-Manuel Miranda is one of his doctors, and that's just something that happens, he comes up with Like a Surgeon, which is now the parody to Madonna's Like a Virgin.
Yes.
And premieres it at a show that night, and while he's still badly hurt, and he's you know, and then he gets arrested. Like, it's all bad.
Yeah, I think he's like, the last song is Eat It, and he gets like upset. Then he gets upset again
that he's reminded that Michael Jackson stole.
Yeah, so it's like the end of his career because he has this like one, this awful concert performance.
And all the song, right. And it's like a song that he, and it, it, yeah. it wouldn't have all happened had he not tried to write an original song in Eat It.
That's right.
So, once he's released from the hospital for that like terrible show and being lewd, released from prison because he gets arrested from that like show because he was getting drunk on stage, he confesses to Madonna that he thinks his career's over, and suddenly Madonna gets kidnapped by people who work for Pablo Escobar.
Yeah, Pablo Escobar is suddenly important in this movie.
He's hilarious. Important in this movie, although we did get mentions of him before, but he wasn't important until now.
Yeah.
And basically, Weird Al has to go do a fight scene with the agents of Pablo Escobar, and he's able to use his one of his platinum record records that he hangs around on his neck, like a necklace, as like a Kung Lao from Mortal Kombat-esque like weapon, a little bit maybe Peaky Blinders, if you will. And so then they defeat Pablo Escobar, and then Madonna is like, let's get out of here. And she's revealed to, you know, be just someone who's like with him just to get the bump, whatever. So then he goes. So then he's like, OK, I'm going to lay low. This is Weird Al now. And he returns home to finally work at his father's factory, which is what his father wanted all along.
But, Madonna becomes the head of the drug cartel because probably Escobar is dead.
The idea is he's like, what if this was us? Screw the movie industry. Yes. Let's like take up this industry. Let's take up the Pablo Escobar drug industry. Yeah. And then he's like. Yeah. Nah, I'm not really interested in that.
Yeah, it's wild.
No, I'm good. And so now he's working at the factory with his dad, and it's so boring, and he's literally hitting the wrong button and like costing people their lives. It's one of the funniest parts of the movie for me where he presses the wrong button and some guy's like, oh my god, my leg!
The idea of the generic factory is my
factory is the best. Mm-hmm. But then there's this really sweet moment where like Al's father in a moment of weakness kind of like confesses to his son that he's actually more like his son than he was letting on. He came from an Amish community. This is so ridiculous. He comes from an Amish community and he was excommunicated. And at this point we go full like comic book spread on the screen of like we get some
panels. It's his journal. I think it's sketches in his journal.
It's his sketches in his journal that are then like animated on the screen. And you know, he goes out on now Weird Al's father is telling the story about how when he was a kid, he went on his Rum Springa, which is a thing that Amish people do when they like go out into the real world and like kind of learn about themselves. And it turns out that his father was also like writing lyrics. So Weird Al's father was also had this talent that Weird Al has. And basically it's the lyrics to Amish Paradise, which is arguably one of Weird Al's like biggest hits that he ever put out, at least as far as I'm concerned. And to that, I mean like that people knew about. And then it wins him a major award in 1985. And then at the ceremony, Madonna, who like you said, is now like the cartel boss, one of her henchmen assassinates Al after his acceptance speech.
Yep.
And then so he just dies. So that's like he's
dead. Weird Al died in 1985.
In 1985. And there's nothing you can say to make me think otherwise. And Madonna visits Al's grave only for the zombie hand of Al to burst through the ground and grab her. And then the epilogue notes that he did die in 1985 and that Madonna Ciccone is still
she's still out there.
And that's the movie.
It's so funny the way that it slowly, as you start to realize, because the first real bit is like the dad being like, no son of mine will ever play the accordion. It's like so silly, and it's so dumb, but it's so good. It's spoofing on so many of these music biopics. I know, like, I have a strong affinity for Walk Hard. I feel like Walk Hard totally nailed satirizing like Walk the Line and Ray. And I know that this movie is based off a trailer that came out at the time that was that trailer parodied those movies. But we've had a rise of them recently in like Bohemian Rhapsody and Rocket Man. Elvis was this year. That trope of like the guy in the hospital and it's like, how did I wind up here? And the flashback that's like exactly used in Elvis this year. It's just so friggin' spot on in terms of like being a parody and being funny and being ridiculous. And it just fits. Of course, this is what Weird Al, the Weird Al biopic is like. It's, of course it is. It's so good.
Mm-hmm. It's like I already said, it's like my level of stupidity. Like if you drag me down with you and you stay there the entire time and you're just trying to one up yourself, you're probably going to get me. You know, this movie isn't, I don't think it's everyone's style.
No, my dad would think this is so dumb.
As far as the humor, but it's no, I would argue for sure, at least as far as I'm concerned, it's no less intelligent. It's no less witty and clever. And that's its own thing. And that's exactly who Weird Al is, right? So like for a movie to be simultaneously so stupid, but really smart, is basically Weird Al to a T, and that's kind of says more about Weird Al than you need to know than would have been like an actual movie about his probably way more boring than this movie life. Like no offense to his life, but it was never going to be as exciting as this movie.
This movie, because the stuff about the accordion stuff is so funny because it's not just like his dad hates it for whatever reason. It's also that like when he secretly plays it at a poker party and they all love it, all friends love it, the point where he's like hanging out with total bros at university and they're all like, dude, you're going to make a kill.
Bermuda. His name is Bermuda. Yeah.
It's so good when they're like losing their mind over My Bologna. It's like so funny in the way that like, I do think like, yeah, it's not for everybody, but I do think like part of what I really loved about this, I have not really revisited a lot of like Al Yankovic music, but boy, he has so many hits, and every time they play one I'm like, oh, that's, that one's really good, like it's really good. The only one I'm like sad that's not in the movie is I can't remember what it is, but it's based on like, what's that one, like a long long time ago, what's that song, the day the music died, American Pie. So it's American Pie, but then the cover is all about Luke Skywalker, and it's the only one. I used to listen to this all the time because
I don't know.
I'm gonna figure it out, but that's my favorite Weird Al parody. It's the only one I was sad as I listened to, but all the other ones, you're like, yeah, My Bologna is a banger. You're like, yeah, yes. Eat It is hilarious. Like Amish Paradise is a, well, I don't know if Amish Paradise holds up as much as the other ones, but
you know, right. But in general, to your point, yes, there is a level of like, it's crazy that he did this so many times, but like, it's not just that it's not just that the song is reminiscent of the song that it's parodying. It's that it's a genuine banger in and of itself because he has because obviously the musical notes and all of the, everything that you're hearing as far as the instrumentation is mostly the same, but then now you have an element, and as he went along there are like these like Weird Al isms, right, of like how silly it almost seems like he was trying to outdo himself, like how silly and how dumb the subject of these things could be, but it's like I think and what we're responding to is the actual talent that it takes to do those things, because he could have created all these parodies and it not amount to anything. So he basically built a career on this and was able to do it across several genres. So I think that's it. The proof is in the pudding.
Yeah. I don't know. I was thinking in this movie, like Paul F. Tompkins shows up as like Gallagher and there's a Pee Wee Herman cameo. I feel like there's not really like a Weird Al like equivalent. I feel like there was like a time where sort of these like niche comedian, like it feels like, being a comedian, this is going to sound pretentious, but it's like a little bit easier because there's so much like access to like you could like be a YouTube star, like Bo Burnham like comes from YouTube and like does these like sort of jokey song things that like eventually makes him famous. But I it's just he's such an interesting person in history that he becomes famous through these like this song parodies, right? Because the other thing too is like I think it's probably just legal to do it, but you probably do have to have the support from like people, right? Like I think like on most of these, like if you go to the Wikipedia pages for like what's the one he does, what's another one rides the bus, it's like what is the reaction from themselves? It's like Brian May apparently from Queen was just like, yeah, I loved Another One Rides the Bus, you know. I feel like there has to be a certain like he's not ever making fun of the songs, it feels like he's making fun of something else, and I don't even know what that is. Like it doesn't really feel like the comedy has like a victim per se. He's not like punching down at anybody, he's just like punching randomly, you know? He's like, another one rides the bus. That kind of sounds like another one bites the dust. It's like so funny. And I just don't feel like there's like, I'm probably like totally missing somebody, but I feel like his style of comedy is something that like felt like it was very 90s. And like, I don't know that it's like around anymore.
Yeah, this, I mean, he's one out of a million, right? He's a diamond in the rough. Like nobody has done it like him since, arguably ever will. And you know, at least like, even I was surprised, as someone who, I think my brother was like a big fan, so like I was exposed to Weird Al like from a somewhat young age. But I think over a certain age, you would have a hard time finding someone that didn't at least know of a Weird Al song, even if they weren't technically a fan. And I think he is who he is for a reason. There's a reason that they paid all this money, Roku, to get him on his movie on a service that nobody could find. Because it's Weird Al, because there's a story there to be told, and he's kind of become larger than life.
He plays himself in this movie, or he doesn't play himself. Sorry, he plays Tony Scott.
He plays a record executive. And it's really funny because in that scene when he's playing himself, the other character that works with him is busy like
Will
really,
Forte.
Really
I love
insulting,
it.
Physically insulting Weird Al, it's Weird so Al character for how ugly Weird Al looks. So then the real Weird Al is like, okay, hold on, let's like bring it down. You know, it's really funny.
I love Will Forte. I know not everybody is a Will Forte fan, but he actually feels Weird Al like, and so like he's done the MacGruber stuff. Yes. Is like a lot of what he's been, so there's a Weird Al-ness to being MacGruber. That it is so funny when he's just like, and you're ugly. It's okay, buddy. Okay, stop. It's so funny, and I think it's a testament to Weird Al, the number of people that we didn't go through. You know, Conan O'Brien as Andy Warhol.
That was like probably my favorite cameo, because I love
it's Conan not even O'Brien. Trying. It's so funny.
And he's not even trying, and he goes up to Salvador Dali, and what does he say? Yes. He says, Dali. He uses his name. I'm not going to remember the joke, but he uses the name Dali in like a sentence where it doesn't sound like he's saying the name, but it's like a double entendre. It's so funny.
It's so funny. Yeah. The Lonely Island guys are all in there as like Pee Wee Herman and Alice Cooper. Paul F. Tompkins, Michael McKean is in here, Patton Oswalt's in here, Seth Green, Josh Groban, like Lin-Manuel Miranda, Jack Black, like these like comedians who are like just coming to hang out in the Weird Al movie, you know? It's like, I think it says a lot about Weird Al and who he is. And that like, his stuff is never like political, but he clearly is just like, he seems like a good dude, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. He does. He really does seem like a good dude. And he was looking so old and sweet and lovely in the beginning of this movie when he's like, when the real Weird Al before the Weird Al movie starts is saying to us, please enjoy this movie that you somehow happen to find on the Roku channel.
Yeah, I know he wanted it released in theaters so it could be considered for Oscars, and Roku has determined that they're going to try and pursue it for the Emmys instead as like a TV film. And you were saying, I think before we started, that like that's probably better. He'll be nominated for Creative Arts Emmys instead, which I feel like there's a better runway to like win than in the Oscars there. But maybe he's just really going for, I wonder what he has. How close is he to an EGOT? Because that could be. He was like, "I finally am making a film," and then he's like, "Actually, it's just going to be for an Emmy."
Yeah,
he has.
But
to
either
be
way, it's one of the letters in EGOT. So you know, you could argue one is no more important than the other as far as getting all the letters in the word. So
here, I'm gonna look it up. Let me keep going down.
Evan Rachel Wood is Madonna. Josh Groban I clocked. He has an appearance as just a waiter. Like my favorite cameos are the ones where they're just like nonsense people.
Agreed.
He
has five Grammys. Sorry.
Five Grammys.
But nothing else. Nothing else. So he doesn't have a Tony anyway. So
Paul F. Tompkins, Dimitri Martin, Dean Sharp.
Dobry Jones. I really love
Michael McKean. Patton Oswalt, like big names.
Jonah Ray, I do. I do want to say, I think my two, I don't know, my favorite thing, I really love the beginning. I love the, like, no, you can't be an accordion player. I really love that stuff. I really love his dad.
He says,
yeah.
Where did you even play your accordion? I was playing in the closet, but now I'm out of the closet. Closet accordion player.
I really love generic factory job and nobody knows what they do and he won't explain it. I think it's like really funny. Just like I work down at the factory, I think is amazing. There's like a similar joke in the latest season of What We Do in the Shadows where they're just like, oh, we work night shift on the railroad. They just keep saying that and not explaining what they actually do. I think it's so funny. And then like, I really was like worried when we got into like Pablo Escobar territory. It wasn't funny, but the fact that like, Madonna ends up running the cartel and then assassinates Weird Al, I think it's like the perfect ending to this movie, because so much of it is like, yes, it's clearly fake and it's a, but there is like parallels to real life. Like, yeah, he wrote I Love Rocky Road and he wrote Another One Rides the Bus and he wrote Eat It, even if it's like swapped. And then the fact that the movie ends on like a totally fictionalized future of Weird Al where this man died in 1985 is hilarious to me.
I agree. It's so funny. And to the point we keep making of just like, how is the movie continuing to outdo itself? It's like, it's clearly exaggerating the truth, in some cases flat out like misrepresenting the truth. And then here for it to be like, oh wow, then he died in 1985. It's just crazy. And he obviously had hits way after that, but it doesn't even matter because he's like, okay, that was one of my biggest songs. And then Madonna killed me. And that's how I want to go out. It's an incredible flex, frankly, as far as I'm concerned. Also, why is Madonna a free woman if she killed Weird Al? That's what I want to know. Lock her up.
No, it's her henchman. So she doesn't get caught.
So she was able to like escape blame, if you will.
She visits the grave. Yeah.
I don't like it.
Yeah, it's so funny. This movie is so funny. It's so great. Yeah.
I do love it.
I did find the sign. My, here's this Anakin guy. Maybe Vader someday later, but for now he's a small fry. He left his home and kissed his mommy goodbye, saying, soon I'm going to be a Jedi.
Jedi. That's right. I couldn't think of the hook. I couldn't think of like the...
Soon I'm going to be a Jedi. That was my favorite one because I love the American Pie. I love American Pie, the song. And then I would listen to
Star Wars, which is no easy feat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. My favorite. What else? What's about this movie?
I mean, it is a tough part about comedy is like, as I just talked about What We Do in the Shadows, Lindsay Wilson and I would get on the pod and be like, so this line was really funny. And then we'd say the line. It's a little tough with comedy. But I'm just happy. I'm happy that this thing got made. I think it's Weird Al, I think for a bit. I think he's to the point of like, what is he saying? What does he do? You know, I think that there's a little bit of like, especially in like the late 90s, early 2000s, I feel like it was a little uncool to like Weird Al. And I'm glad that Weird Al is getting his like flowers and everyone's like, yeah, he's tremendously nice. He's really funny. He's just being stupid. And like, it's okay that somebody made his whole career on just being like stupid. But the only way to be truly stupid is to actually be incredibly smart. Right. So like, as you're saying about this movie, that it like the reason it can be so funny at being dumb is because it's actually really smart. And so I'm glad that people are like, everybody can just be like, yeah, we all love Weird Al. Okay. We all love
him. Yes. Unironically.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad we can all do that. Yeah.
Yes. I'm glad that we as a culture have moved on.
And also I'm glad that Daniel Radcliffe is totally jacked. He's so jacked in this movie.
He was always like thin in shape, but here it's like, clearly I went to the gym for like a whole year and good for him. He has like Tanya from White Lotus money. Arguably a lot more. So like, good for you, Weird Al. What's his name again? His actual name is not Weird Al. It's
Daniel Radcliffe. He's jacked. He did actually get assassinated in this movie, but
yes, he did. He is now dead. But he lived as he died, being mostly jacked.
being jacked Weird Al. Yeah, I just love it. I love that they made Weird Al jacked. Yeah, that's like so funny because it's like the thing that Weird Al could be like,
not him.
Yeah, what if we make Daniel Radcliffe get jacked for this movie and then I'm a jacked Weird Al? It's so funny. It's so good. Yeah. It's because Weird Al's like making fun of himself also, which is like very relatable.
Not me, but like let this person who's good at acting play me. It's just it works on so many levels. We stan all sides of it.
Dr. Demento is real. Like, he's not fictionalized for the show. He did kind of make Weird Al famous, so it's amazing that, like,
Dr. Demento? Saying,
yeah, I'll be Dr. Demento. Yeah, he's like a radio DJ, I believe. Yeah.
Dr. Demento. Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Told me. These are kind of kinds of things I should know, but I wasn't there. So
no, somebody said he would have to be demented to like play this type of music, whatever he played, and it's that he became Dr. Demento, became his like radio broadcast personality. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, he had a radio show. Yeah.
That's Weird
he
Al.
Might? He's still alive, I think. So.
Yeah, yeah, Weird Al, I think, is still alive for sure.
No, he's not. He died. Oh,
God, it's so confusing.
No, Daniel Radcliffe is not alive because they had to do the stunt for real in the movie. Keep up.
Oh, no, he got Brandon Lead from The Crow. So sad.
Oh, that is sad. Earlier, I just want to say, when I was on mute and I really want, and you were like, yeah, and I think it, like, My Sharona, and he writes the song My Baloney, and I was like, no, the whole point is that it rhymes with My Sharona.
I know, but like, the whole point is that not how you say it, but like, that is how you spell it.
My,
like,
again, Bologna.
Yeah. I know.
My Sharona is a catchy song, and My Baloney is a very catchy song.
It's a very catchy song, and also just speaks to the importance of having like sandwich supplies at home.
It's true. We used to eat a lot of fried bologna at my house.
Ooh.
A lot of it. Yeah, it's great. If you ever had fried bologna, it's really good. Yeah.
It's pretty good. Put most things in the pan. Right.
Is that the last note on Weird? That can't be the last note on Weird, please.
It's got to be. It's got to be bologna. Fried bologna.
Yeah, what if I make a career out of writing parody songs of Weird Al songs?
Or just like coming up, just like telling personal stories about Weird Al songs.
Like a whole stand-up bit, and I'll be like, yeah.
Just like personal anecdotes.
And then say, and so if I was to write, I would do fried bologna, and then I would immediately move on to the next bit. Like, that's the whole bit. The punchlines are always, what would I name my parody song of a Weird Al parody song?
I'm sure people would love that.
Mm-hmm. Great.
You'd be
so I'd be like, my friend used to have a dog. He had a dog, right? He had a dog, and his dog's name was Gus. And if I ever wanted to like imagine riding around on my friend's dog, I could write a parody song called Another One Rides the Gus. All right. So moving on. Okay.
That is now the last note that we are ending on as far as Weird. That's weird. People should seek it out, like we said.
Amazing.
What else? What else are we doing? I heard there was like a music. There's a music bit. This is a movie about music as far as I can understand it.
Yeah, Ariel, we asked the specifically the folks in the Discord. This is the thing we used to do about once a month. We would do a countdown. We are incorporating it into Post Show Recaps Theater. So when there's an occasion to ask people to rank movies, we will get them to do so. And this month, I thought it would be fun with the Weird Al movie coming to the Roku channel to see what the patrons thought the best movie about music was, Ariel.
Mm-hmm. And the best part was watching everyone be like, well, what does that mean? What is that? And to be clear, not that, like, I don't mean it in the cruel way of like,
no,
confusing. It's just funny because the point of it is to be not vague, but the point of it is to take it how you want to take it and just put forward your votes for whatever movie you think falls into that category. But people, we and myself included, we all get hung up on like, well, what are the rules? And it's funny, especially in the, I think this is the perfect one to start out with because it's Weird Al, because the answer is there are no rules.
True. Yeah, because people were like, wait, do musicals count? And people were like, I think musicals about music count. And everyone was like, but I already voted. It's just like, well, I guess this is how we live now. So, yeah, I mean, to be fair, someone made fun of me because like, but Chris, you really like rules. I was like, there are rules. I give you a category, you interpret it, and then I give 10 points to whatever you put at number one. And I will say, I think I said this on the last episode we recorded. I definitely will like exclude a vote if I think it absolutely is like not even truthful to the category whatsoever. Like if you're like a movie about music, I think I joked with this, like you put a silent film, but like, you know, if you're just like, the Titanic, even Titanic, I might count because there's those people who play the music on the ship. So I don't know if I can think of an example, but if you're really not trying, I'm not going to like count your vote. But if you, there's a lot of stuff in here that I would not think is the best movie about music that people voted for. And I let them vote for it.
Listen, the people want what the people want. And I think, as we said, we wanted people to run with whatever movies they thought that applied. And we got some, as far as I'm concerned, we got some great responses. So we appreciate each and every person who responded.
I agree. My favorite is that coming in absolutely dead last, because it got one singular vote, a 10th place vote, and then alphabetically got sorted to the bottom of the list. The last movie on the list is Weird, the Al Yankovic Story.
Wow, it's perfect. Weird Al himself would have it no other way.
I know. It's very funny. Okay, let me give you the top 10 list. Ariel, typically what we used to do is I'd be like, okay, number 10, and I tell you, and then we talk about it. In this new format, we're going to play around a little bit. So I'm going to tell you the full list, and let's talk about whatever we want to talk about. So okay. Here we go. Number 10, 37 points, Hedwig and the Angry Inch. At number 9 with 38 points is Almost Famous. Number 8 with 41 points is The Sound of Music. What number am I at? 10, 9, 8, 7. 42 points is A Star is Born. Most people indicated that they were voting for the 2018 version. Some people did not indicate, but I gave them all to the 2018 version.
Yeah, I think for the most part, people are going to mean that version.
Yeah. Number 6 with 45 points, Pitch Perfect. Number 5 with 50 points, Coda. 4 with 54 points, This is Spinal Tap. Our top 3, rounding out the top 3, 60 points, Whiplash. Number 2, 87 points, Coco. And the number 1 film by a landslide with 123 points is School of Rock. Ariel, give me your thoughts on this list.
I was so happy to see Almost Famous on the list. It was my number 1. I didn't, in the interest of full disclosure, I wasn't able to I could have thought of 10 movies, but I didn't put forward a list of 10 movies because I just picked the few that I could think of that meant the most to me.
There's all the rest of these, and I feel like maybe the rest of it is like, I really don't know, and I have to think about it, and we were just running out of time, and you were like, just write the top 6 or whatever.
These are my top ones that are non-negotiables for me as far as mentions. And like I said, Almost Famous was my number 1. It's arguably like Cameron Crowe at his best. It's sincere. It's beautiful. It's a story about music, obviously, which is what the assignment was. And it's some of these actors like at their best, like Kate Hudson. When I think of her, that's the movie that I think of immediately. And it means a lot to me personally. And I think that, Frances McDormand has an incredible role as a mother in this, some incredible lines. It's just, I don't know. It surrounds me and like a warm, loving blanket when I'm watching it. And I never grow tired of watching it. And I've seen it a bunch of times whenever it's on TV. It used to be on TV a lot more than it is these days. But whenever it was on, I would watch it. And it's a great movie that makes people feel good. So if people haven't seen it, I recommend that they do.
Yeah, I like Almost Famous a lot. I definitely put it on my list. It is tied for the most first place votes. It gets 3 first place votes. School of Rock also gets 3 first place votes. We didn't think that, like, there's such a disparity. Like, School of Rock just got votes like at every point on the list, so just like amassed the most amount of points.
Right.
But Almost Famous is a favorite. I believe our friend Fitzy, I believe it's his favorite movie. Maybe don't quote me on that, but I believe that is true, or at least he very much loves it. So shout out to Fitzy. I've seen every movie on this list, Ariel, except for one, and I'm very embarrassed by which one I haven't seen. Would you like, this was a segment I thought about pitching, proposing a long time ago to Ariel, which was like us guessing what our movie blind spots are. And I feel like I'm very embarrassed by this. I can tell you the list if you want. So
I have it in front of me.
And then the idea was going to be like, if you guess that I have a blind spot about a film and you were right, like I have to go watch that movie and I'm like, I have homework. And if you're wrong, I get to like, volley back over to you. And how dare you? Of course I've seen that movie. But there's only one movie in this whole list I haven't seen. And I think it's a personal embarrassment for me.
Yes. I think taking specifically into account the grace of it all and the kind of humor that you appreciate, my guess is that you have not seen This is Spinal Tap.
I love This is Spinal Tap. How dare you, Ariel?
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's a movie that you should be embarrassed that you should be.
No, I love This is Spinal Tap. I think it's hilarious. It's exactly, it's a mockumentary. It's so stupid. It's great. Yeah, Rob Reiner, Michael McKean, he was in Weird. He's in This is Spinal Tap. No, I love that movie. I'm embarrassed because it's like, I feel like my prestige credentials will get questions when I tell you I have not seen Whiplash, Ariel.
Oh, that was a good guess too. It's like,
yeah,
kind of indie. It kind of was like, it got really big in a way.
It won, didn't it?
It won. It's definitely nominated for a bunch of actor awards. I know J.K. Simmons. I don't know that he won, but I know that he was nominated.
He won for Best Supporting Actor. Nominated for Best Picture. It won for Film Editing and Sound Mixing, and it got nominated for Adapted Screenplay by Damien Chazelle, who also has a big movie coming out at the end of this year. Yeah, La La Land is his other film. Yeah, I feel like music, and then this year he's doing a movie about movies. It's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A movie about movies. We love a meta here.
Yeah. Do you think movies about music work better than movies about film? I have a thing about it, because there's like a degree at which it's like separate from, sometimes I feel movies about movies to be very pretentious. And this, there are like four of them coming this fall. I think Empire of Light is a movie about movies. The Fabelmans is obviously a movie about movies. Mm-hmm. And Babylon is a movie about movies. And I feel like I'm missing one more. And sometimes I feel like even if it's very good film, like The Fabelmans is very good, but I feel like there's like this pretentiousness to it of like a director being like, I'm going to write a movie about movies.
I don't disagree.
Like, yeah. Whereas at least music is a step, but it's still art.
You know? Oh yeah. Sometimes you take a step because the music is going, you're like, ooh, I'm dancing. Got to take that step.
That's right.
But I agree with that. I think, you know, as you get into the meta levels, regardless of what the medium is or the genre is, the more self-referential or the more limited the references are, in a way, like if it's a movie about movies, like you said, then like it's always gonna feel, it theoretically it's easier for it to feel pretentious than when it's like a cross medium thing. I don't know if that point even makes sense, but I think and music is such a, I think music in a different way is such a universal, and
I think it's more universal than movies, even.
Than movies, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, like it's more of a, music is something that transcends language sometimes, like certainly the sounds do, but transcends the medium in a way that I think films don't always. So I think, you know, movies about, to the point that like people were having trouble picking like what movies they were, and like what would the movie, like do musicals count, and like all the stuff we were talking about when, you know, people being confused about the rules, just shows you how complicated you can get with movies about music versus movies about movies. I think
I'll tell you something, I think the patrons absolutely nailed this list. Like it's not the order I would have these movies in, even some of these movies I wouldn't put in my top 10, but I do think like none of these movies, if we were doing the full countdown pod where I'm like, all right, number 7, and let me tell you, I don't think it fits the category, but that's okay. That's like
agree to my very selfish personal taste. Yeah, I looked at these movies and I was like, all right, this is a great list.
Yeah, all of the movies are about music. They're not like music. They're like, none of them are like musicals that aren't, where the subject is not about music. I think the patrons really nailed it. I think School of Rock, because we talk about School of Rock, because it's number 1 by a bullet, 123 points, number 2, Coco at 87. It's a very PSR pick, which I kind of love. I think that if like you and I were making these lists each month, they'd look dramatic. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like they would feel too pretentious. And School of Rock is like a great pick as the like populist choice of this countdown. It's a very like fun film. I think that there's a lot of like PSR synergy with like our synergy with Rob as a podcast, and like the Mike Whiteness of it all. White Lotus. Oh, there's some White Lotus crossover here. Ariel. That I think School of Rock is like, I, you know, oftentimes I'm like, yeah, it's not what I would have picked, but I see why it won. And I don't disagree. It's a great movie about music. It's really fun. It's like one of my favorite movies. Like it's one of Jack Black's best performances. It's such a heartwarming film. It's a really good choice to win here. And I think
Monica Vitti. Sorry, I was thinking about Bright Lotus, this week's Bright Lotus. I was impressed. What movie like struck your eye specifically?
On the list, besides
the one that you were like ashamed that you didn't see.
Yeah, I'm gonna correct that. I was almost gonna watch Whiplash and I ran out of time. But for me, Coda is I think a very interesting here, and that it comes in at number 5. It gets 50 points. It doesn't get a ton of votes. It gets a lot of like lower end of the list votes. So a lot of people put it like on their list, but it's not at the top of their list, which I think is kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think like there was another movie that just misses the cut here at number 11 in Tick, Tick, Boom. But I felt like Tick, Tick, Boom had a little bit of like, it felt like recency bias to be on the list, which is, I think, something that like, you know, if we did this exact list in a year from now, I think Coda is one that maybe moves down. I think honestly, I really love that movie, but I think in 5 years, I feel like a lot of Oscar winners feel like this sometimes. You're like, oh, really? Man, Coda won Best Picture that year? Like, okay, all right.
Yeah, you know? Well, listen, it's no to, and I mean this in the best way. I mean this, to be clear, go even further. I mean this as a positive. It's no Green Book. Like, I think Green Book. Recent memory is the one that's like, really? That's the one?
Coda's
well,
like, I think we, right. Can we say this about The Artist on the preview part? It's like, oh, The Artist won Best Picture. Okay.
Yeah, but that, if anything, was like, oh, that's like, it feels like pretentious, but it doesn't feel like, frankly, as far as I'm concerned, a bad movie that offensive. Didn't deserve to win. Yeah. Or even worse, right? An offensive one.
I gotta say, Green Book got a vote on the list. So I don't want to, because he's a musician.
I mean, it's people like it, and that's all power to them. I did not engage.
That's kind of the big one. I thought La La Land might get a bump. I felt like there was a little bit of between La La Land and I think Bohemian Rhapsody got more votes than I would probably give it. I think between Rocket Man and Bohemian Rhapsody, Rocket Man was like by far the one I liked more. And I thought did more of a service to Elton John than Bohemian Rhapsody did to Freddie Mercury. But I thought La La Land was the one that might actually get, I'm surprised didn't crack the list is the thing. Pitch Perfect is another one that like, I wouldn't have put on this list, but I get the like sort of appeal of Pitch Perfect and I'm not surprised that it's there. Yeah, what about you? Anything?
Yeah. A movie, endlessly watchable, School of Rock, Mike White, you already called out The White Lotus, you know, Connection. But you
are you a Coco fan? You didn't put Coco. Sweet... I don't think you put Coco on your list.
Oh God. Okay.
Have you seen Coco?
I have to. Okay, hold on. There's a story. I did go. Jess already yelled at me about this at one point.
I'm gonna yell at you.
So I have like movies that I didn't catch in theaters, and then like I'm like waiting kind
for them
of
to okay.
Really,
okay,
so Coco finally fair. Re-released.
Yes.
At the beginning of COVID, and I went, right at the beginning of like when they started opening theaters again, and I was falling asleep.
Oh no!
It was a bad movie. I was really enjoying it, but I was so tired that day, and I was like, it was just a bad idea. But I didn't have a choice. It was the only day they were showing it. So I care so much about Coco, like from the outside, that I did something that I rarely do, which is I left because I didn't want only because I, again, not because I was enjoying the movie, but only because I was like, I need to watch this one day properly. And I'm not going to have like the ending and the emotional climax of it ruined by like my half sleepingness.
I've been there where like, and this is like not in a theater, but like, I'm like, I've never seen this classic and I'll like put it on and realize I'm like been on my phone too much and then don't really have enough time to like rewatching. Like I can't do this now.
Yeah.
I need to do it later.
This isn't the right time.
Yeah. Yeah. So Coco, Ariel, Coco was my number one film. I love Coco so much. It's my favorite. It's my favorite Pixar film. It's so good. It's exactly what I like, which is that there's like, it's like about death. So it's like a little bit dark and sad and I love it. It's so good. And the music's so good. So you got to see Coco at the right time. Yeah. It's okay.
Whiplash, incredible movie, Spinal Tap, Coda. We talked about at length because of the Oscars. A Star is Born is one of those movies that I wish we had been podcasting already because I think it was really fun to talk about. It's
all the Bradley Cooper Gaga stuff at like the Oscars was like,
it's so good. It's so good. And I think, it's a movie that caught me by surprise. It was one of those few movies that I walked into, that I was dreading almost, or excuse me, not dreading, but perhaps that I was like, my expectations were low because I didn't want to get heartbroken, and instead my heart was broken in a completely different and beautiful and amazing way. And I that movie has a special place in my heart. especially in the recent recent years of like movies. And The Sound of Music, I've only seen half of because I have a childhood friend who it's like one of her all-time favorite movies. She's seen it a million times. She found I finally revealed to her, because I was keeping it a secret on purpose, I finally revealed to her maybe like in the last 8 years that I hadn't seen it, and she like forced me to watch it, and then I think I fell asleep out of spite.
Can I tell you, so I hadn't really watched The Sound of Music. I watched it a few years ago, and can I just tell you, I love that this music, that everyone's like, ah, oh, beautiful movie, and it's like, you know, she's like spinning around in the in the Swiss Alps, and then like, so the first half of the movie is like her training all these children, and like they're singing and they're learning how to sing, and the second half is them just like running away from Nazis.
What the heck? Ooh, took a turn.
Yeah, it's like hilarious almost.
It's where
like,
is Mary Poppins to save them all from the Nazis? I know.
That movie is like wild. That it's like the first movie is full on, like very nice musical. Second half is like, uh oh, the Von Trapps are being chased by Nazis. It's like a wild pivot that it, like nobody, I feel like nobody really talks about. So yeah. You talked about Almost Famous. We haven't talked about Hedwig at all. I know, like a lovable cult classic. I love it a lot. David Cameron Mitchell, he's great. Or John Cameron Mitchell. Ooh, embarrassing.
So yeah. Well, you know, whatever.
John Cameron Mitchell.
We've made worse mistakes on the pod. No, I shan't. I shan't out all of our imperfections. But that's music. We just talked about all of music that has existed in all of human history. Look at us.
Yep. Yeah, we did it. I'll put the list out on the Discord. If anybody wants it on Twitter, if you tweet at me, I could share the list with you there as well. I can round out the list with some of the things that did not make it either, and some of the point totals. I will not share who people voted for. I feel like people submit with
that's a patron exclusive. Like, you get doxed on your votes as a patron.
No, I'll never release who you voted for. I know, and I judge your list, but nobody else will get to it.
But nobody else does. Fair.
Yeah. So yeah, that's it. And we'll do more of these. If you have suggestions for countdown ideas, like I would love to do Spielberg movies when The Fablemans is coming out, and you know, and if there's other milestones or things that we're excited about. I know you and I would love to talk about movie scores at one time. At one point, I feel like this is a good avenue to do that. So yeah, if you want to hear us talk about older films, let us know what we should talk about.
Love it. That's incredible. I think this is the end of the road for us. I hear the music. They're trying to play us off. So let's quickly do some. They're going to shoot us. Grace, duck and tell us where people can find you.
I'm on Twitter at Hi From Grace, covering Interview with the Vampire with Rich. I should have one more House of the Dragon pod, which should be very fun. Should probably be out if by the time you're able to listen to this. So that should be fun. Covering The Crown with Shannon Gus. LT is going to join me for the premiere. This week, Errol, you and I will have an exciting new pod about another Netflix show that's dropping. So looking forward to that over on the Rob Bozo Podcast YouTube and Twitch channels. I have Roll Call, a board game show where a bunch of PSR and RHAP personalities join me to play board games each month. So check that out. And again, I'm on Twitter at Hi From Grace. What about you, Ariel?
Love it. I am on Twitter also at that other Ariel. I am covering The White Lotus with Dr. Amanda. That's been super fun. Did a whole season one rewatch. Now we're into season two. Some exciting guests. And you should look out for that. We had Rob's sister Nino on. We're having Gabby Pascuzzi on this week. It's been a lot of fun. And someone on this podcast might make an appearance. I don't know who. There's only one other person.
You?
It's for yourself. It's me. Ha ha. I'm still one of the hosts. But yeah, that's we invite you to seek us out there. Please, again, reach out to your podcast catchers and try to subscribe to the Poetry Recaps Theater feed. It would be very much appreciated. But until next time, we'll be back later this week with some additional movie coverage because we cannot help ourselves. But until then, ta-ta for now. Bye.
Into the real thing. Into our catchphrase. Did you end the recording?
No, I didn't. Okay, hold on. Okay. But until then, this is Ariel. Can you leave this whole part in? No. Okay, stop. But until then, I'm Ariel. That's Grace. We're Poetry Recap Theater. Ta-ta for now.